Stay tuned for an edition of House Call recorded earlier this month with guest host Mackenzie Young, as she speaks with Rhonda J. DeMarco, the Suicide Prevention Program Coordinator for Southeastern Idaho Public Health in Pocatello.
KISU-FM, Mackenzie Young, guest host of House Call on the topic of suicide prevention. Go ahead and introduce yourself, and we'll continue the conversation from there.
My name is Rhonda DeMarco, and I work for Southeastern Idaho Public Health. I am the Suicide Prevention Program Coordinator. So I work with systems. I do a lot of training for healthcare organizations and really try to bring this topic out into the open so that we can talk about it, so that we can start making a difference for people.
Yes, and suicide is such a closeted topic. Why is that?
There's a lot of misinformation out there about it, and I would like to address that in a bit.
Could we have a little background on where you're coming from?
So I taught at ISU for about 10 years in the Health Education and Promotion Program, and I had the opportunity as a student to take a class by Dr. Mike Morris called Death and Dying, and that class was extremely influential on me. I actually went on later to teach that class and gained a lot of insight into the topic of suicide and other topics surrounding death and dying and bereavement, and so I gained a lot of interest, but I also have lived experience with this. I understand what it's like to want to die by suicide. And so coming into this position now, it feels kind of like full circle for me. I'm really thankful to be able to do this work and to be able to bring this out into the open and get people just talking about it and know that it's okay to talk about it.
And I see you have a master's of health education.
Yes, I do. Okay. From ISU. Go Bengals.
That's right. Suicide is a hard topic to talk about. I might even say death in general is a difficult subject, but it will all face us one day. And just by looking at the statistics, suicide is going to affect us or affect a person we know.
Yeah, and it's difficult for people who, even those who have been deeply impacted by suicide, to talk about it because there's stigma surrounding it. So one of the things that I am interested in doing, and one of the things that's going on nationally, is we're really trying to change the way that we talk about this, change the word that we use to talk about it. And I understand that people get tired of political correctness. I do too. But honestly, if by changing the words that I use, I can make a difference and make it easier for someone to get help, then I'm willing to do that. So it makes total sense to me. Some of the words that I'm talking about that we want to avoid are the words commit. And it's so common, we hear it all around us. So if those words come out of your mouth, first, I want you to forgive yourself for it, because it's natural that people say that, because it's what we hear. But I also want to encourage you to kind of think about that, because the word commit, when you pair it with the word suicide, there's an automatic element of judgment. Because what do we commit? We commit sin.
We commit
adultery.
Murder.
Yeah. So there's already a really negative connotation with it. But there's a second reason that we don't like to use the word commit. And that is because in truth, we know that people who are dealing with thoughts of suicide are really ambivalent about it. There is a part of them that wants to die, but there's a part of them that wants to live. And so when we talk about commitment, there really is not a commitment to suicide. It's more of an interest in trying to avoid a painful situation. So those are two reasons we want to avoid using the word commit.
Thanks for bringing that up, Rhonda. I have a bachelor's in communication, also from Idaho State. Go Bengals. And the way that messages are framed is very important. Are there other words that we can use or avoid?
Best practice right now is just to use the words. If you're talking about suicide, use factual terms. And that's why we say died by suicide instead of committed suicide or lost their life by suicide. That's why we say attempted suicide. Those are just factual statements that don't have an element of judgment. And it's really important both for people who are experiencing thoughts of suicide and for those who have lost someone to suicide, because if there's stigma attached to that loss, it's more difficult to get the support that you need as well. So another word that I want to talk about, the word completed suicide, is one that kind of has come about because people are avoiding using the term commit. Mm-hmm. So the challenge with using the word complete is it kind of gives you the notion that once you start down that path, it's something that you're going to finish. So for instance, how many of us have unfinished projects at home that we don't just toss, right? You don't throw away all those materials. We keep them with the idea that we're probably going to complete that project someday. So again, with the ambivalence surrounding suicide and the fact that 90% of people who have made a suicide attempt do not ultimately go on to die by suicide. So the idea that it's something that once you start down that path, it's something you're going to complete is completely false. We try to avoid that term. And then there's another one that gets used sometimes. And again, I think this is in an effort to talk correctly about it, but sometimes people will say that someone had a successful suicide. And there is no successful suicide. It's always a tragedy. And so we want to avoid that term as well. Instead of worrying about all the do nots, though, I would just encourage you to really think about just using the word died by suicide or attempted suicide. It just keeps it simple.
Mm-hmm. And what are some other myths about suicide that people might have?
I'm really thankful that you asked me about that because it's a really important topic. And while I don't really like to focus on what is false, it gives me the opportunity to talk about what is true. So one of the myths is that no one can stop a suicide, that it's inevitable, and that's really not true. I have lived experience with it myself. I have made past attempts, and I can tell you suicide is not inevitable. I plan on remaining among that 90% of people who do not go on to die by suicide.
That's a great statistic to be in.
Yeah, it definitely is. But it's really important that people like me are willing to talk about that, because usually when we talk about suicide, we only hear about them after the fact. We don't talk about what it's like to have those thoughts. So we need more people to be willing to come forward and say, you know, I have a story and I lived and I'm here to tell it today. But the stigma attached to suicide makes that difficult, even for people who have made attempts and are going on and thriving in their lives right now.
Yes, and so people's minds change all the time.
Absolutely.
I mean, how many times do you go to a restaurant or a store and change your mind and what you're going to purchase?
Right, absolutely. Another myth that I want to talk about is the idea that confronting a person about suicide will only make them angry at you. Or there's another one that goes hand in hand with that fear of asking the question about suicide. The concern is, if I ask the question, are you thinking about suicide, that I'm somehow going to plant a seed in someone's mind that wasn't there before. But the reality of it is that when someone asks someone about suicide who is actually dealing with it, that can act as a huge relief for a person. It may be the very first time that a person has been able to safely talk about their emotions and these terrible, frightening feelings that they're having. So the healing can begin just by opening up that conversation and talking about it. So I really want to encourage people, it's okay to ask the question. But if you ask the question, you want to have some answers, right? You want to be able to have some resources to refer people to.
Yes.
So that's important as well.
And sometimes just asking the question is hard. How do I ask the question? Well, you just say, have you ever had suicidal thoughts?
Yeah.
I was in a training as a group. We collectively spoke those words together.
And it's awkward, isn't it, the first time?
It's hard, but then it becomes easier. And so then when you're in a position, maybe with a friend or a private situation with a stranger or something, and you need to use that tool, you're now capable of saying, have
yes.
you ever had suicidal thoughts?
Yeah. And a great approach is just walking up to somebody and saying, hey, I'm noticing this about you and I'm concerned, and opening up the topic that way. You know, if it's a stranger who is obviously dealing with emotional upset, that's something that you can do. But a lot of times it's going to be somebody at your side, somebody that you already know. And really, don't we want to be prepared to be able to address those concerns as they come up?
Yes.
So the best place to have a heart attack is actually in Seattle, Washington, because one out of every 60 people are CPR trained. So the more people that we get on the ground who are ready to ask that question, know how to respond if someone says, yes, I am thinking about that, and get them to the resources that they need, you can literally save lives. And so we really want more people in the community to have those skills and to gain a comfort level talking about it.
And there's quite a few resources that are available.
Yes.
To community members.
Yes, there really are. See, another myth about suicide is that it should be left to the professionals, that a layperson like you and I, who maybe don't have a counselor's degree or don't have a sign on our wall, that we can't appropriately help someone. And it's really not true. Like I said, the more people we have on the ground who are there side by side, because this is not an us and them situation. This is an us situation.
Yes, it could be your family member.
Yes.
It could be your best friend. It could be your partner.
That's right.
Or a coworker.
Or a child or a grandchild. And I've talked to people who have taken training specifically for that purpose so that they can talk to their own family about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's very important.
So statistically, how common is suicide?
It's far too common as a completely preventable death. Any suicide death is a tragedy. But in the United States, we lose over 47,000 people every year to suicide. In the state of Idaho, we have the fifth highest rate in the nation, and that rate is 24.7%, and that's actually 58% higher than the national average. So we have significant challenges in the state of Idaho, but I also really want to leave a message of hope that there's help out there and there are things that we can do as individuals to make a difference for each other. So the other thing that I like to mention when we talk about statistics is sometimes when we talk about numbers, we think of numbers exactly. And every one of those 40,000 numbers in the statistic are individual people, and they've impacted multiple lives. Their loss is devastating to people around
yes,
them.
Yes, their loss ripples
yes.
through. It's like throwing a big rock into a pond.
Yeah, so I just want to connect you to the human side of statistics and remind you these are individual lives that were lost or impacted by suicide.
Yes. Yes, and Idaho is ranked fifth highest in the nation?
Yes.
I found it quite interesting that all the other states that are ranked above us for deaths by suicide are all located on the western side of the United States.
Yeah.
And that Alaska is ranked number one.
Mm-hmm. So there are several different ideas about why that might be. Why are the rates high in the Pacific Northwest? I don't know that anybody has an exact answer about that. However, there are a lot of different things that may be contributing. We have a culture in the West where we take care of ourselves. We pull ourselves up by the bootstraps. We're independent. We're self-reliant, which is great. Until it's time when you need help. And then it becomes very, very difficult to actually seek help. And then with the stigma surrounding mental health already, those two things can come together to make it really difficult for people to stand up and seek help when they need it. We also have a scarcity of resources here. We also have some weather patterns that make a difference for people. We know that for some people, they're really sensitive to exposure to sunlight and they need that for their mental health. And so that can make a difference. But
another reason I've been told is that a lot of us in rural areas own firearms.
Yes, that's also true. If you overlay maps of gun ownership alongside the suicide rates, you find that suicide rates are very high or are higher in states that have higher gun ownership. But there are some really great opportunities for firearm owners where they can really do some things that will protect vulnerable individuals that might come into contact with them.
KISU-FM. I'm Mackenzie Young, guest host of House Call this week, talking about suicide prevention with Rhonda D'Amico, Suicide Prevention Program Coordinator at Southeast Idaho Public Health. We've talked about the language to use, some myths and statistics of suicide. We'll get back after the break and talk about gun safety and talk about other ways to prevent suicide.
KISU works hard to ensure the reliability of our FM signal, but occasionally, seasonal weather or equipment failures cause us to go off the air. Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org, or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
KISU-FM, Mackenzie Young, guest host for House Call, this week, talking about suicide prevention with Rhonda D'Amico. Rhonda, before the break, we were talking about some potential reasons Idaho might be ranked fifth for deaths by suicide in the United States, and you were getting into opportunities for gun owners. Can you continue there?
So, of course, using gun safes, that's going to be critically important. If you have firearms and can actually lock them away, make sure that people don't have those combinations. It's surprising to see how many children to actually know where the keys or the combinations to gun safes are. So that's something that you just want to be cautious about. And not just children, but other vulnerable individuals. You can also store your ammunition separately from where you store your actual firearms. And it's really important that you do that. What that can do is it can give that person a cushion of time that can be a protector. So they may have the firearm and they're looking for the ammunition. And in the meantime, someone may have the opportunity to intervene. The person may have the opportunity to change their mind. So that cushion of time is really, really important. And then another thing that firearm owners can do is use cable gun locks and trigger locks, which many of the all of the firearms dealers give away when they sell new weapons. So the firearms industry is really behind gun safety, and actually I view them as a partner in safety. So Project Child Safe is an organization that distributes gun locks for free to law enforcement agencies so that people can go directly to their police station and say, I need some cable gun locks. Do you have those available? And not only do they have those, but they also have some educational materials that they hand out with it. So guns are really important. But while we're talking about that, I also really want to address medications. This isn't a gun control issue that I'm talking about. This is a safety issue. And so alongside firearm safety, we also want to make sure that we're addressing medication safety. So we know that in Idaho, 61% of those who die by suicide use a firearm, and 16% die from medication overdose. That's another place where we can make a difference. When you think about your medicine cabinet, what do you have stored in there? Do you even know, right? A lot of people, our medication cabinets are a dark land that we only go to every once in a while, and we really need to go back through them, get rid of things that we don't need. And especially if you've got painkillers, narcotics, any kind of opioids, that can really be a problem for people. If you have those in your guest bathroom, people are going in and closing the door, and if dependency is a challenge for them, they may not be able to pass by that temptation. So just really encouraging people to safely store the medications that they do have, safely discard the ones that they don't need. And you could do that by bringing them to a lot of the pharmacies now will take drugs back, and so will many of the police stations. So you can call your local police station and find out whether they take those in your pharmacies. There are also some bags that you can actually use that basically you throw your medication in and you put warm water in it and close it back up. It renders the medications inert and it makes it safe for you to throw it into the landfill. So we encourage people not to actually flush their medications down the toilet because it can be an environmental issue. So safe disposal and safe storage of medications is really, really important, just like safe storage of firearms is really important. Mm-hmm. So, and I can tell you from my personal experience as a person who has made past attempts, there was another time in my life when I went searching, and I would have ended my life, but I was not able to find the means, and I'm here today to tell you about that. In that moment, had something been available, I believe I would have used it. So I really, really encourage people to just think about those things that you have in your home that might be a problem for another person.
Yes. So. Thank you, Rhonda. That's very important for safety and prevention of suicide that all people can take part in. It's not super difficult. It might cause you to have an extra stop on your way home one time.
Yeah.
Here, can I get a gun lock? How can I dispose of these? I've got these prescriptions. But you're part of that 90% of people who have attempted suicide that have not been successful. So are there some warning signs that we would be...
Yes, there are warning signs. And as we approach this topic, I just want to tell people, you're not responsible for what you didn't know. So whenever I broach this topic, I just want to make sure that I'm not inducing guilt in people who maybe will think that they should have seen something or they should have done something. Again, let me just repeat that. You're not responsible for what you didn't know. So this is not intended to make you feel bad if you have had a loss in your life and you didn't recognize signs or you didn't see signs. We do know that 80 to 90% of people do show some warning signs. The challenge with the warning signs, though, is that they look different and people will show them differently to different people. Warning signs of suicide can be direct. It can be statements like, I'm going to end it all, or I'm going to kill myself. Indirect statements are those that maybe don't necessarily clearly say, I'm going to take my life, but they definitely are indicators that there's something going on. So you're not going to have to worry about me anymore. This isn't going to be a problem. So those types of statements that are indirect but still are definitely warning signs. Other words to be concerned about are when somebody says, I'm just so tired, I don't feel like I can go on. And then there are some behavioral clues. There are some things that you can watch for if you're concerned about someone. There are some things that you can watch for as far as behaviors. If they're giving their personal possessions away, or if there is, so this is a big clue, this should be a huge red flag. If you know that they're stockpiling pills or trying to acquire a weapon or some way to take their own life, that's obviously a red sign and action needs to be taken to help that person at that point. Other risky behaviors that can be situational clues might be that somebody suddenly goes on a wild spending spree. So a lot of times when people think about risk-taking behaviors around suicide, they're thinking about, oh, I'm driving recklessly, or I'm doing things that are putting my physical life in danger. But sometimes it's other activities that are risky. A sudden interest or a sudden disinterest in religion can be another sign. So just watch for changes in behaviors. And if you see those things going on, just watch the context. Be willing to ask that question like we talked about and know some resources to get them to. So,
what are some resources that you know about, Rhonda?
First of all, I hope that everybody's connected to a usual source of care so that when you're sick, you actually know this is where I'm going to go for my care. When you do that, you create an opportunity to build a trusting relationship with a provider so that when you have things that are a little more awkward, embarrassing, maybe even shameful because people feel that way about suicide, that you're actually willing to talk to them about it. So I would encourage you to go to your normal source of care for your medical care. And I can tell you that providers in our area have been trained. There's been lots of training opportunities in the last few years. And there's another one, our district, Public Health District 6, has just been chosen to pilot zero suicide in the state of Idaho, and they're hoping to spread this across the state in the future. So we'll be working directly with our healthcare providers, with our hospitals, our behavioral health providers, to really work together to figure out how can we make sure that when patients need help with suicidal thoughts or any kind of behavioral health issue, that really our entire system is working better together and is more informed about mental health overall and able to provide that care. A lot of this can be taken care of by your primary care specialist. This doesn't necessarily have to go full out to a behavioral health center. We are currently recruiting 14 healthcare systems to participate in the Zero Suicide opportunity. So if you're listening and you want to be a part of that, please contact Southeastern Idaho Public Health because we would love to have you on board.
Great.
Yeah, so that means providers are going to be trained. We're going to have more going on that provides opportunities for patients to be on a path of care that they continue on and they don't get lost and fall through the gaps in our systems. It's exciting.
Yes, very exciting.
And then I also want to let you know that I offer a couple of trainings. QPR stands for Question, Persuade, Refer. And it's basically knowing what to look for, being able to recognize warning signs, knowing what to say when you do see someone, and then knowing what to do if they say that they are. So QPR training, it's an hour and a half. Kind of think of it as CPR for emotional crisis. It's an hour and a half investment of time that will help you be more comfortable. And you took that class.
Taken it through Idaho State University. I highly recommend it. It takes It takes the fear away.
And then we have another training that's called Mental Health First Aid. This one is a little bit more of an investment in time for you, but it covers many different mental health disorders. So you talk about everything from trauma to schizophrenia to panic attacks to understanding depression and anxiety. And really the value and the strength of that class is it really demystifies mental health disorders, which is really important to helping us learn how to talk about them, be willing to talk about them, and be willing to get help. And then the other thing it does is because it builds empathy, you get some experiential learning as part of that. It really helps to knock that stigma down surrounding mental health. So it just makes you look at things differently when someone is struggling with a mental health disorder.
Yes, so. And you know, who doesn't struggle with some aspect of their life? Degrees vary, everything varies from person to person, but...
And life is hard. It is sometimes.
So. It's complex.
So I would just really encourage people to get comfortable talking about mental health overall. Don't be afraid to share your challenges with other people. Find a safe network of people where you can really talk when you are in a place where you need some help. And then, you know, look at the professional resources that are out there that can really make a difference as well. Mm-hmm. But we want bystanders to be willing to step in. We want to be a community that cares about the person standing next to us and is willing to invest in their lives by taking training, by being willing to notice what's going on. So as a kind community, that's something that we definitely want to support.
Thank you, Rhonda. And how would people get more information on the QPR training, the mental health first aid, and the zero suicides for healthcare professionals?
So my phone number, my direct line at Southeastern Idaho Public Health is 208-239-5227. And my email address is rdamico@sif. That's Southeastern Idaho Public Health, so siph.idaho.gov.
And this interview will be placed on our website, and all the contact information will be added there as well.
Great.
So
great.
Listeners can go to kisu.org and find this interview and your contact information. You've given us a lot of great information, Rhonda, on trainings and the language that we use, statistics and myths, warning signs of suicide. Would you please let us know about the suicide prevention hotline?
Idaho Suicide Prevention Hotline is 1-208-398-4357, and that is talk or text. And that's really important to people because a lot of times people want anonymity when they're talking to somebody about this because of the stigma, because it's uncomfortable.
You've been listening to House Call, recorded earlier this month with guest host Mackenzie Young speaking with Rhonda J. DeMarco of Southeastern Idaho Public Health. Rhonda is the Suicide Prevention Program Coordinator. Join us next Thursday morning for The Nature of Idaho, when the topic will be forest fires. That's November 21st at 8:30 a.m. here on KISU-FM. On Point is next. This is KISU Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg.